Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. It's hard to believe that less than a month ago, we still had mounds of snow covering the ground, but the weather has finally gotten warmer. Today will be sunny with temperatures near 75 degrees and 46 overnight. Tuesday will be a little cooler with a high of 65 and a low of 41 at night. But then on Wednesday and Thursday, the weather will bring some rain with temperatures around 48 to 50. Overnight on Wednesday, it will drop to 32. Friday may bring a few snow flurries with temperatures in the 30s and into the 20s overnight. So although it feels spring-like today, later in the week we'll still have some unsettled weather, typical for April. On today's show, we hope to have a live report from a pro-LGBTQ demonstration outside Ames High School this morning in response to picketing by an anti-gay group from out of state. We'll hear about the Making Democracy Work Award that is being given by the Ames chapter of the League of Women Voters this week. And in the last part of the show, Keith Morgan from Story County Emergency Management will join us to talk about how to best get information about weather events in Central Iowa. But first, we have Dennis Hart with news from across the state.
Thanks very much, Gail. It's great to be back here in this seat on this second Monday in April. Presidential politics continued to make big news around the state last week, as it will so often in the next months. In Ames, Democratic presidential hopeful Beto O'Rourke told a gathering at Iowa State University that students will lead the country on such generational issues as climate change. He said, in his words, "You're the leaders of this moment, and you always have been," noting the young people who stormed the beaches at Normandy during World War II and who led protests during the Civil Rights Movement. O'Rourke emphasized climate change during his presentation, saying it would take something just short of a miracle to tackle what he called an existential threat to humanity. In Muscatine, another presidential hopeful, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, said people convicted of felonies should never lose access to the ballot box. While most states disenfranchise felons, Sanders said the convicted still have a right to take part in elections. Iowa Republican Governor Kim Reynolds has been pushing for a state constitutional amendment to let people convicted of felonies automatically have their voting rights restored once they have served their sentences. But last week, the Republican-controlled Iowa Senate essentially killed the plan after the state House, also controlled by Republicans, had approved it. Meanwhile, word last week that the state of Iowa has restricted what prisoners can watch on TV after a sexual harassment lawsuit that cost the state $2 million last year and which subsequently led to separate claims from prisoners who contend a ban on pornography is unconstitutional. The state made national headlines last year after a former female prison corrections officer won a $2 million sexual harassment jury verdict after claiming male inmates were permitted to view hardcore, violent pornography. The new policy generally prohibits prisoners from watching anything stronger than TV-14, which is material marketed as potentially unsuitable for children under 14. Also last week, the Iowa Supreme Court ruled that police departments can keep investigative reports secret even after an inquiry has concluded. That means agencies could withhold a range of documents, including video, from the public and the news media. There was also word that former Iowa Supreme Court Justice Darrell Hecht had died after a battle with skin cancer. Hecht had served on the state Supreme Court from 2006 until he resigned last December while receiving treatment for melanoma. He was 66 years old. And this past Friday, Governor Reynolds administered the oath of office to the man chosen to replace Darrell Hecht on the court. Christopher McDonald became the first person of color ever appointed to the Iowa Supreme Court. Meanwhile, wind turbines, yes, wind turbines, also made news last week. President Trump said noise from the turbines causes cancer. Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley did not hold back. He called the president's statement idiotic. There was more fallout from all the flooding that made news around Iowa in recent weeks. Farm Bureau economists said damage to farms will reach $2 billion. They said Iowa farmers will struggle to plant as much as 145,000 flooded acres along the Missouri River. And the U.S. Corps of Engineers said the March runoff from the Missouri River Basin above Sioux City set a record at 11 million acre feet. The previous high was 7 million acre feet, set way back in 1952. Meanwhile, Residents of Glenwood, Iowa, were told to conserve water last week as officials worked to get the city's water sources and treatment plant working after last month's flooding. People in the Mills County town were urged to only use water for necessities after boiling it, while the wells and water treatment facility were repaired and tested. Also last week, a report that homeowners across the state had opened their mail and found that their home's value had increased, sometimes steeply, since the last assessment in 2017. 16 cities and counties surveyed by the Des Moines Register saw average residential assessment hikes of 10% or more. Another 42 cities and counties saw an average increase of 5%. Assessments are based on sale prices, appraisals, and home improvements. Also last week, a report that a Pella health coach had defrauded dozens of people out of millions of dollars by getting them to invest in a medically-oriented gym program. 49-year-old Mark Allen Blankspoor had told investors he was involved in developing the program and licensing it to fitness clinics across the nation. At least 150 investors gave Blankspoor about $15 million. Federal authorities said Blankspoor used that money for his own personal expenses and to pay other investors. Last week also brought word that the Diocese of Des Moines had a new schools coordinator. Dr. Jerry Deegan is the new person in charge. He retired last year from Dowling Catholic High after 41 years at the school, 17 of them as president. The Des Moines metro area has 11 Catholic elementary schools, along with Dowling Catholic High. Tragedy made news last week in Iowa. A woman in Cedar Rapids died in a fire at her condominium complex. She was identified as 61-year-old Tony Cooley. An Ankeny man died last week when his vehicle was rear-ended, causing it to roll over several times off a highway. 83-year-old Arthur Newberry was ejected from his SUV during the crash, which took place on U.S. Highway 20 in Calhoun County. Newberry was not wearing a seatbelt. In Keokuk, a teenage boy died in a bicycle crash. Authorities said 14-year-old Brandon Scott Fitzgerald was riding his bike and holding onto a car when he fell. In West Des Moines, a woman died after she was found lying on a road near South 64th Street and Coachlight Drive on Friday. She was identified as 18-year-old Sakira Bonner. Authorities are investigating her death as a homicide. In Osage, a woman was fatally injured when a tree fell on her. Authorities said 52-year-old Jacqueline Kapustinsky was clearing an area of trees when one that had gotten lodged against another one fell, striking her fatally. And in northwest Iowa, authorities identified the man whose body was found more than 10 days earlier on the bank of the Floyd River near a college campus. The Iowa State Medical Examiner identified the man as 27-year-old Corey Allen Wright of Sheldon. Officials said the cause of death had not been determined. Also last week, word that two people had gone to the hospital after fire destroyed a home on West 4th Street in Boone. A dog and cat were found deceased inside the home, and another cat was found alive under a bed. Authorities said the home is a total loss and that the fire is thought to have started in one of the bedrooms. The cause remained under investigation. Meanwhile, a man charged in a Chicago homicide was arrested in Iowa City last week. 34-year-old Philip Maccabee was picked up by members of the U.S. Marshals Service's Southern Iowa Fugitive Task Force. He's been charged with first-degree murder for a shooting death last year. There was word last week that a Fort Dodge man accused of fatally shooting two Fort Dodge brothers is now claiming that law enforcement violated his rights as they investigated the killings. 28-year-old Tanner King said his right to remain silent was violated and that his request for a lawyer was ignored. Elsewhere, an Ames man was sentenced to 30 years in prison for recording and sharing a video and a photo of himself sexually abusing a girl. 28-year-old Tyler Gene Harris was sentenced for sexual exploitation of a child, distribution of child pornography, and possession of child pornography. He was also ordered to 15 years of supervised release after he gets out of prison. In a Polk County court case, a jury awarded more than $12 million to a Panora man who underwent debilitating prostate cancer surgery, then learned he did not have cancer. An Iowa clinic pathologist had mixed up slides of Ricky Hewitt's non-cancerous tissue samples with those of a man who did have prostate cancer. The mistake led to an incorrect diagnosis, and a surgeon removed Hewitt's prostate gland 2 years ago. The operation damaged nearby nerves, leaving Hewitt with severe complications. And an Iowa man was sentenced to 120 days in jail for ignoring orders to clear away thousands of tires from his Mitchell County property and for not paying fines. A judge found 63-year-old Gary Eggers of Stacyville in contempt for failing to remove the tires from an unlicensed salvage yard and for failing to pay $110,000 in penalties. There was also a report last week that some Windsor Heights business leaders and at least one city council member say it's time for the city to think about getting rid of two traffic cameras on University Avenue that have been responsible for issuing more than 73,000 speeding tickets in the past couple of years. But others in the city said the cameras are doing their job and slowing drivers. Windsor Heights installed two permanent traffic cameras on University Avenue 2 years ago. In sports last week, the University of Iowa's women's basketball team lost in its NCAA tournament game against Baylor. The final score was Baylor 85, Iowa 53. And one more note from last week, an Indianola middle school teacher has received Iowa's version of an Academy Award. David Dubchak received the Award of Achievement from the Iowa Motion Picture Association for his 2018 film Learning from Failure. The film focuses on how to incorporate failure into education and the importance of failure in successfully completing critical thinking challenges. It features several of his eighth grade students. And there you have it, your very own award-winning summary of the past week's news from around the state. I'm Dennis Hart, bringing the curtain down on this episode, but promising to be right back here in this seat on Friday when I'll take a look at what made news around Ames. Between now and then, I hope you have an award-winning week.
Thing called spring, when the world was writing verses like yours and mine, all the lads and girls would sing when we sat at little tables and drank May wine. Now April, May, and June are sadly out of tune. Life has stuck a pin in the bone. Spring is here. Why doesn't my heart go dancing? Spring is here. Why isn't the waltz entrancing? No desire. No
now, I believe we're going to have some live news coverage. Westboro Baptist Church, an out-of-state group known for their anti-gay speech and actions, announced last week that they plan to picket the students at Ames High School this morning. And Local Talk provided coverage of that last Friday. And right now we have KHOI's Ursula Rudenberg live from outside Ames High School. Let's hear what's going on there this morning. Ursula?
Hi. So I'm at the corner of Northcrest Drive, and I think it's Northwestern, right on the corner where the high school is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a, I don't know if you want to call it a demonstration. I think they call it a show of love. There's lots of rainbow flags, and there, and you could really call this an outpouring. There's about 100 people here, and they're still coming. They have to walk here because the high school doesn't want them to park in the parking lot. So you see people kind of walking from numerous directions. And like I said, there's already about 100 people here with signs like, because of people like you growing up, I almost killed myself, some died, and think you're fabulous, fabulous. Love is love. Hell must be fabulous. We think you're fabulous. We all support students. So I'm going to put on one of the folks who's standing here and ask her to say a word. Okay, hold on a second.
All right, great. Live reporting from outside Ames High School.
So I am here to show love and support for our community and just showing that the community supports all. Doing with all.
You want to stay on the radio while you're here?
I'm here because I feel like what they're doing is wrong. Hating people for what they are and what they feel and what they believe in is just wrong.
Why are you here?
I'm here because I... what he said, I'm here because these people are doing bad things to people who don't deserve it, to people.
Thank you. By the way, the folks in Westbury Church have not shown up yet, so I don't have any sort of confrontation going on. This is right now simply a community demonstration.
A positive show of support.
Would you like to say why you're here?
I'm here to support our students. We love them. We love them all.
Anything you'd like to say while you're here?
I was not comfortable with allowing a hate group to come and spread their hate without there being a response from our community to counter that. That's not our message.
Would you say why you're here?
I'm just here to show my love and support for all the students here in Ames and the whole queer community here in Ames.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Would you like to say why you're here?
I'm just here to support everybody and show my love to everybody.
And this says proud ally. Would you like to say why you're here?
I'm here because I want everybody to be whoever they really want to be, no matter what they should be discriminated for any sort of reason.
Okay, and there you have it. And we have high school students coming from the high school now to watch. And some of them are actually taking notes, which is kind of interesting.
So it's like a class assignment.
Like I said, the time ride has just arrived. You're the new batch of people.
Oh.
So I would say the crowd is more than 100 people by now.
Wow,
so
that's impressive.
That's the story, Gail and Cynthia. It's quite a crowd out here.
It sounds like there's people of all different ages as well.
Yeah.
Young people, older people, students.
Yeah, lots of different types of people here, all sorts of races, ages, professional students, all sorts. It's really, really quite something.
Well,
so
then,
that's what's going on.
All
so
right.
We haven't seen what people yet.
Okay. All right. Thanks for bringing
bye-bye.
It to us, Ursula.
Once there was a thing called spring, when the world was writing verses like yours and mine. All the lads and girls would sing when we sat at little tables and drank May wine. Now April, May, and June are sadly out of tune. Life has stuck a pin in the bone. Spring. Why doesn't my heart go dancing? Spring is here. Why isn't the waltz entrancing?
That was Spring Is Here, sung by Ella Fitzgerald. And this is Local Talk on KHOI. I'm your host, Gail Seiler. And we just had news from Dennis Hart. And we also heard a live report from Ursula Rudenberg from the high school where there's a pro-gay student demonstration of love happening. Bev Trumple is the recipient of this year's Making Democracy Work Award, which is given out each year by the League of Women Voters. I had the opportunity to talk with the president of the League, Nancy Halverson, and with Bev Trumple, who is being honored with this award this week.
So, Nancy, let's start by having you tell us about this award, what it is and what it's trying to recognize.
This award was initiated 3 years ago for the 90th anniversary of the League of Women Voters of Ames and Storey County. And it actually is nationwide as well for all leagues. It was established to recognize people in our community who promote voting rights, educating voters. They may have served in a public arena before as a public service appointee or elected official. They have assisted and promoted voter registration. They lead efforts to introduce public policy that promotes fairness, equality, and diversity in our community.
And how many years has this award been given?
This is the third.
Do you think it's particularly important to give an award like this out at this time, and why?
I think it's always important. As I said, it was developed to recognize the 90th anniversary of the League of Women Voters, where we promote fairness, and we're nonpartisan. We have men who are members as well. But I think this is time that we need to recognize folks for the positive things that are happening in our communities.
And we have the awardee for this year with us. We're honored to have Bev Krumple here, this year's recipient of the Making Democracy Work Award. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being with us. What kind of work have you been involved in that has led you to receive this award?
Well, there are various aspects of what I have been doing. First of all, I have worked extensively with the League of Women Voters over the year. I can't even tell you how long I've been a member. I know that's going to be the next question, but I've served as president and secretary for several years and program chair and in other capacities as well. But I truly believe in the League of Women Voters and what we're doing. As Nancy said, we're nonpartisan, and we do take positions to help government be more effective, and we educate as well. We do extensive studying on topics. We do not take a position unless we have really studied the issue extensively, and sometimes that's over a year of a group interviewing people, doing research, and coming up with different positions for making the community better.
Can you give us an example of one of those that you've worked on?
I have not worked directly with the study groups. I have reported when they have made their final policies. But the most recent one was supporting the new healthy lifestyle center that is being proposed. And we felt there was a real need for a more warm water swimming opportunities as well as other recreational opportunities.
And why have you over the years been so involved and so passionate about making democracy work?
Well, it's part of me. And I think it's needed more now than ever before. To me, democracy is involving everybody, that all people can have a say in helping with the government, no matter what their background, their color, their nationality, abilities, gender, sexual orientation. We want all to be able to participate, and that's important to the League of Women Voters.
This question maybe is for each of you. Do you see young people being involved in government these days?
Not as much as we would like. However, within the last election cycle, the off-year elections, I think we registered, or our voter registration group registered, well over 300 students at Iowa State in one day.
And students actually helped us in that registering the voters, too, and that was very helpful. So they were helping by participating in helping register voters.
So is that something that you've also been involved in, registering voters?
Yes, yes. Campaign? I think that's an important part of the League.
What else have you done that you're particularly proud of?
Well, there are probably two things that I'd like to talk about. One is the Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance, which I am secretary for right now. This was formed to help refugees settle here in Ames, encouraging them to come. And unfortunately, at the federal level, that's been cut drastically. But we have been able to work with a couple families, and that's very rewarding. It takes a lot of patience and a lot of people working, but it's fulfilling to be able to do that. The other thing that I really have gotten into is working with the Mitchellville Prison, the women's prison, and then helping women who come to Ames resettle after they have fulfilled their sentences and help them be successful so they don't go back to prison. And I have learned an awful lot doing that. It's much easier to go back to prison than it is to get a job, get housing, transportation, and unfortunately in Ames, it is very difficult. One woman I took around to 29 different prospective employers, and she was one of the most capable women I know from prison or outside of prison. And she finally got a wonderful job and is being very successful. But people hesitate to hire felons and also to rent to them. The legislature almost passed the Restoring Felons Voting Rights, but unfortunately that didn't happen this year.
When is this award going to be given?
It will be presented on Saturday, April 13th at the League of Women Voters annual meeting at Gateway Hotel here in Ames.
And there are also some related events going on Tuesday of this week.
Correct.
Tell us about those.
The county supervisors will declare a Story County proclamation for BEV for that day, Making Democracy Work Award, and the City Council will do the same on Tuesday evening at 6 p.m.
What would you say to people who just kind of express the belief that, our vote doesn't matter, or government's too big, it's just going to do what it wants? How would you convince someone that they might want to get involved?
From my perspective, you just have to look around at some of the things that are happening now. Some of the people who are becoming more disenfranchised rather than being pulled up in our society as a whole. I think part of that is youth. We need to make them care more about voting and about their voting rights and understand it is a right and it is so precious.
Well, I agree with Nancy on that. My philosophy is that a real democracy does care for all people, and the most vulnerable, no matter what. And I think, as she said, I think democracy is at risk right now, especially on the federal level, but not necessarily only there. I think we have a lot of work to do yet there's always more work, but to make us better.
Are there particular issues that the League of Women Voters are working on now?
Actually, we're going to start working on updating a study that the League of Women Voters did in 1973 on the waste treatment plant. We think that needs an update so that more of the recyclables are getting to where they should be, to truly keep them from... No one thinks that we're contaminating the oceans here in the middle of the United States, but we certainly are. And so we're going to restudy that and take another look at what can be burned and what can be handled in other ways.
And then what happens to a study like that? Is it taken to the city council, or what's the route?
I think it kind of depends on, you know, who would be the power that be, so to speak.
The decision makers.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that from what I know in my time in League and just around Ames, the League is respected for those studies, highly respected for those studies. Because we don't just, as Bev said earlier, we don't just throw an opinion out there. We back it with facts.
Mm-hmm. And you don't usually endorse particular candidates, is
never.
That correct? Never.
We never endorse a candidate.
So nonpartisan, but encouraging people to participate.
Absolutely.
In our democracy.
And if I could mention youth again, the League of Women Voters actually offers free membership to students, and that can be an adult student, someone in their 40s or 50s that is in school. And if someone is just not able to come up with the $60 a year, we have programs that will help them out. But we want students to join. That's why it's become a free membership in the last year or so. And we want to show them how many different ways, if they have a couple hours to spend, they can help democracy work.
And do you even have high school students involved before they can vote?
Yes. At 17, I believe, is the rule. They can start... Uh-huh. You know, helping, being a member.
And this is kind of an historical question. Why is it called the League of Women Voters?
That goes back to Carrie Chapman Catt. when she was fighting for women to get the vote.
But now it's much more diverse and
yeah, correct. We have 160 members in Ames, and I think we now have 35 or 40 men.
And I know that the league is very active in having candidate forums and yes. that kind of thing, which I think the yes. community really values.
We don't just want voters, we want informed voters.
We thank KHOI for broadcasting those forums. It's very helpful to get the information out there.
Yeah, we try to get them recorded so we can share it with more people on the air.
Right.
So, Bev, now that you've won this award, are you just going to sit on your laurels and not do very much anymore? I'm kidding, of course. What are you going to be working on in the near future?
I will not be sitting on my laurels. And first of all, I want to say that I am representing hundreds of people in Story County who are really working just as hard to make democracy work. And I appreciate the honor, but it is very much a community effort to do this, and we appreciate that. Right now, I'm still very active within the Refugee Alliance. And also, I think we have a lot to do about immigration as well. And those would be things that I really would really like to focus on.
All right. Anything else you'd like to tell us about the League of Women Voters or this wonderful award?
If anyone would like more information, they can go to our website, aimslwv.org, or we have a Facebook page as well. We would love to hear from them. Any questions, leave us a message.
Okay, and we'll put a link to those when we post this on the KHOI website.
I'd like to thank the League for sponsoring this award. It's an honor to be honored, but also I think it's a very important recognition that we do talk about democracy and how we can make it better.
And we should mention also it's a community award, although it is a League of Women Voters, but anyone in the community can nominate someone. We send out nomination papers to lots of businesses and social organizations. It just happened that Bev was the most qualified this year.
This year, it was one of your own. Well, thank you both very much, Nancy Halverson and Bev Crumple.
Now that it's spring, many of us are excited to have birds returning to the area and frequenting our backyard bird feeders and bird houses. So here's some helpful information about that from Pat Schlaubaum.
Phenology is writing down nature's happenings when they occur. The first firefly of spring or the last pelicans of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. And as Lee Searles of Marshalltown writes, phenology is the study of natural cycles in the lives of living animals and plants. Today's phenology is about house finches and conjunctivitis. It's been a long winter season, yet a harbinger of spring has returned to KHOI's doorstep. Our house finches have returned for another nesting season. The plaintive singing of our KHOI house finches that nest above the doorway is a welcome serenade of spring. Their singing is beautiful indeed. House finches come to our backyard bird feeding areas in increasing numbers. Yet on occasion, house finch visitors are exhibiting a disfiguring eye infliction. Doug Haar, Iowa Audubon president, recently reported a house finch with conjunctivitis. Their eyes become matted over that creates blindness and a lingering death. The disease can be thwarted by sanitizing your bird feeding areas. Scrubbing your feeders with a 10% bleach solution is necessary each spring. And raking the area of excess sunflower hulls and other leavings of the winter season is recommended. Basic maintenance is necessary where we let nature run her course. We can't sanitize the KHOI nest, yet we can clean up our bird feeding stations in our backyards. Back in the early 1990s, the house finch would have been a candidate for the title of most successful bird species in North America. In the early 20th century, these raspberry-colored birds had been illegally sold in East Coast pet stores. When they were set free in New York, they became established in quiet communities with giant trees. The house finch population began marching across the continent, and the little brown bird with a cheerful red head was a familiar sight at backyard bird feeders in the West and East Coasts. Then a poultry pathogen made an unexpected cross-species leap, and house finches debuted a new form of conjunctivitis. Ultimately, though, the outbreak for a beloved backyard bird species turned into the perfect opportunity for scientists to observe how disease spreads and evolves in a natural environment. Over the past 2.5 decades, Cornell University researchers and their colleagues have tracked the epidemic known as house finch eye disease across the country. Their data are providing new insights that may be applicable to headline-making human epidemics such as Zika. A year after conjunctivitis first emerged, the disease was reported in Ontario to the north, Virginia to the south, and Ohio to the west. In fall 1995, it was in Indiana, Michigan, and Illinois, and by fall 1996, it had reached Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa. In only 2.5 years, the conjunctivitis epidemic had spread throughout most of the eastern house finch range. In a sense, vulnerability of house finches to conjunctivitis is natural selection in current time. So we welcome house finches and remain eternally vigilant to assist all wildlife. So here at KHOI, we want to encourage all our listeners to enjoy songbirds in your backyards. Yet we would be remiss to not encourage cleaning up on and around our bird feeding areas. Scrubbing our bird feeders with a 10% bleach solution is necessary this time of year, not just for the sake of house finches, but do it for all your feathered friends in your community. And that's our phenology for today about house finches at our sanitized bird feeding areas. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM. Find the website at khoifm.org and locate the donate button to support this station. This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation's Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at oasco.org.
That was KHOI's naturalist, Pat Schlarbaum, who never fails to enlighten us about things related to the natural world around us. And Pat would want me to share with you that if you have not been watching the Eagle Camera in the nest in Decorah, you might not know that one of this year's eaglets hatched over the weekend, and all eyes are waiting for the second egg to hatch. So check that out. It's very cool to watch what is happening in the nest and also to live chat with other eagle fans from around the world. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI. I'm your host, Gail Seiler. We've been joined in the studio by Keith Morgan from Story County Emergency Management. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
And Keith comes in once a month, and we're very thankful to him for that. And today our topic, I guess our broad topic, is going to be communication, kind of from emergency management, but also back and forth between people and emergency management. So where do you want to start?
Well, first off, communications. We have lots of exercises where we're working with our first responders and everybody else. And the one item that always comes up at the end that you can almost guarantee is going to be what we call an after-action item is communications. And sometimes it's the technical aspects of communication. Sometimes it's the way we communicate. But it's probably one of the most important parts of emergency management. And in today's world of communications overload, we really try and work hard in emergency management to make sure that people get the information that they need when they need it in a format that really tells them what to do with that information, because we want both people and businesses to be an active part of our response, and they can really help us out to lead to a successful resolution of the situation. So we look at it both from, I'm going to start from what's the most passive way that you can get information on emergency management, all the way down to where you're interacting with us and giving us the information that we need. So the first one is it comes over your cell phone. We call it the wireless emergency alert. Have you ever had your cell phone buzz, this weird buzzing, and all of a sudden a message comes up on it?
I'm the wrong person to ask that question because I don't really have a cell phone. But Cynthia, our engineer, is shaking her head.
Yeah, this is a new system that we've got.
Okay.
It's right now very specific. It's down to three major alerts because we feel that, again, trying to target those things that you absolutely have to know. So if there's a tornado in your area, if there's a flash flood, not just normal flooding, but flash flooding, and also the amber alerts will come across your wireless device. And it's a really unique buzzing that will come up on it. And it'll try and let you know that those events, which are really events that we want you to know about now, are happening. One important thing to remember about it is your cell phones don't know your cell phones do know exactly where you're at, but the cell phone towers don't. So they are based on – they're going to put that information out over the cell phone towers that service the area where the alert is at. So you may be across the border and the alert might be for, let's say, Hamilton County. And if you live in northern Story County, you might get an alert for up there. And again, that's because your cell phone is hooked into a tower.
It's connecting with a tower up in that area.
Exactly.
Okay.
But it's better in that case, we feel, for a few extra folks to get that kind of an alert or a warning than those that really need it to not get it. So that's – it comes with your cell phone. It's one of those things where it used to be you had to activate it, but now it's pretty much built into all the cell phones that are coming out. So it's a great tool.
So people don't have to register particularly for that service.
No, exactly. And that's why I say it's the most passive. If you're carrying a cell phone, it's going to alert.
Another question on that. When people are traveling, will that work also? Like, say you're driving up to Minneapolis and you've crossed the border into Minnesota. Will it connect with towers up there?
That's the beauty of the system. I was driving from here on over to Blackhawk County, and I went through one of the counties that was having flash flooding. And my cell phone alerted me to it because I drove into an area where that alert was at. So somebody coming here from Utah driving through will get an alert that either the flash flood, the amber alert, or the tornado. So that's the great thing about it.
Okay.
If you're down south, it still works.
So that's really helpful when people are traveling.
Exactly. So traveling or just in the area. The next step, which is you have to do something for this, is going and getting a national weather radio. I know you hear me say this over and over again, but it is probably one of the best things because at night, when we're probably most vulnerable to these quickly developing potential disasters, that weather radio is going to go off and it's going to wake you up. And again, they've made the system go from where weather radio would activate if there was anything in a multiple state area. You can tune your weather radio down to just your county or maybe the county next to you and even the different kinds of alerts. So if you don't want to get an earthquake alert, you can go ahead and disable that particular feature. So very programmable to what you want. It takes a little bit of work to do that. If you have problems with it, give our office a call at 515-382-7315. We'll try and talk you through the process. If that doesn't work, bring it on down because we want you to have that weather radio set up to alert you. Some of the little tricks we do is, especially folks that live in Ames, you're right next to Boone County. I'd put Boone County in there so you get that little bit of extra warning on the weather before it gets to us. So very programmable. Again, you've got to invest maybe $30, $40 in a weather radio and program it, plug it in, and make sure that the batteries are up to date. But it'll give you very, very important information.
But the key is to get one that's programmable, because otherwise you'll just get alerts from all over the place.
Right. You'll get all the alerts for that particular channel in that particular area. Mm-hmm. So, again, in this area, you might be getting stuff for Polk County, even further away than that, which you probably may not want. So that's the reason. Invest a little bit more. They're not that much more expensive, and you'll get the information that you want. And that'll keep you from unplugging it, because you get too much information. Mm-hmm. We keep going back to that. We want you to get the targeted information that'll mean something to you.
So the idea is to keep it on all the time, and then it will alert you when needed.
Right. The tones on them are very loud. They're designed to be that way. I can hear mine downstairs, even though I keep my weather radio upstairs. So that's the kind of alert that you're going to need, and especially when you're inside. You got your house sealed up and you're not expecting bad weather. It can be that information that keeps you alive.
Okay. So we've talked about the wireless alert system that works through your cell phone. We've talked about getting a National Weather Service weather radio. Mm-hmm. And what's the next level?
The next level really tunes it on down to Story County. It's called Story County Iowa Alerts. It's a way that I can send you information if there's something going on in your particular area. It does require you to go to our website, which is www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA. I've got a section on there that's called Story County Iowa Alerts, and you'd have to go in and register your cell phone. Now, your landlines, which I know there's a lot of people laughing out there, what's a landline, would have automatically been registered. But we don't have the capability of registering your cell phones. So we need folks to go to that website, register their cell phone, and as they're doing it again, they can tune what we give them for information. They can select the different communities that they might want to get information about by just checking a box. By their address that they put in there, when we have a geographical event, we can draw a circle or a square around it, and people inside that geographical area will get the information. So if you live in Story City, your kids go to a school in Roland, and you work in Nevada, you'd check all three of those communities so mm-hmm. we can tell you something going on there. Or if your address is within one of those, you'll also get the information. But again, you've got to go to that website and you have to sign up. Another great feature on it is if you have any physical disabilities or anything that we need to be informed of that could create the situation where you need extra help, you can also go ahead and self-identify through that system so that we can, again, get you the kind of help that you need.
What kind of alerts will you get through that system that you wouldn't get through the two others that we spoke of?
This system is designed much more for, again, a local emergency. One of the key parts is we have decided to, again, to balance it so you don't get information overload. We do not put weather information through that system so that because that can be an awful lot of alerts, maybe desensitize you to it. But for instance, it can be all the way from something like a boil advisory, which is the slower moving event, all the way to if we had a hazmat situation where we needed you to get away from a potential plume of deadly mm-hmm. chemicals, we could put that information out also. We've actually loaded up all of what we call our Tier 2 facilities that have hazmat into the system with a preloaded alert message so that we could quickly tell you there's been an event here, go this direction, and then go here for further information. So we can do it quickly, but yet we've thought through the messaging because in a disaster, one or two words can make a big difference. So we've taken the time to develop that message to make sure you get the information you need.
And once you register via your website, people will, similarly to the first one, get a text on their phone?
The great thing is we can give you both a voice message and a text message. We can even send you emails with the message.
I was going to ask if you can get an email.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So we can hit all of those, and you can sign up up to 5 cell phones on the system at one time okay. so that you can make sure that you have it, your spouse has it, your children have all got that information. So not only look out for you, but talk to your friends about this. Talk to your neighbor about it, especially if they're elderly and may not know about this. This might be the way that we get them the information that could save their life.
Okay. And I think there's some other things you want to tell us about.
Our latest edition is where the information starts coming back to us. We have a damage assessment app on or link to a website that we're now looking for citizens to first off report to us weather. It's on the same website, www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA. But this one is if they see weather, they can go in there and it'll walk them right through how to report that weather, and which is absolutely essential. We have a lot of storm spotters and like that, but they're not everywhere. And if people see weather and report it to us, we will be able to report that to the National Weather Service. The radar only looks so low into the atmosphere. What people are seeing on the ground can be absolutely important for them to get the full picture of what's happening, develop those warnings for the people that are downstream from that weather. Additionally, should they have damages due to the weather or anything else, they can report those damages. And over the years, by collecting this information, we'll be able to see where we're receiving the most damages and try and put in what we call mitigation efforts to try and reduce our vulnerability to those kinds of damages in the future. A lot of times we can get grant money if we can prove to people, yeah, we're having these damages, and with a little bit of investment from the government, we could reduce a whole bunch of damages. But if we don't have these kinds of reports, we won't know it. One important thing, though, for people to know is that that damage assessment and this reporting app does not replace 911. If you have a real emergency, if there's something that you need help now, do call 911 right away, and that way you'll get the help you need. Because during a storm, there's just usually one of us that's monitoring that particular website. We're communicating with the National Weather Service and our first responders, and we might miss it if somebody was to report something that they really needed help through this app. But it's a great two-way communications that'll allow us long-term to really get a picture of what's happening, and even short-term to be able to help out the Weather Service.
People can do that kind of reporting via your website, but you mentioned it's an app. So it's an app that people can actually put on their cell phones?
It'll be a little bit more difficult if they try and do it as an app. When they bring up this link, it'll give them the choice to either go to it via a browser or an app. I wouldn't go the root of the app. I just bring it up in your browser.
Okay.
And it's so easy that even I could do it. So that means that it's absolutely the best it could be. We also want businesses to think about this sort of stuff too, because their reporting their damages is extremely important to us. And they also need to tap into pretty much all of these different communications channels so that mm-hmm. if a disaster is happening, they can take steps to protect their employees, customers that they might be having, and hopefully reduce the damages that they incur.
So individuals need to be aware of this. We need to be aware of it for these methods of communication for our family members as well, if you have someone that you're concerned with, but also businesses.
Yes. We always talk about, for us in emergency management, the individual is a key part. It's almost like a three-legged stool. The individuals need to take care of themselves. Businesses need to take care of themselves. And we as the government will try and make sure that infrastructure is there for all of us to work together to reduce our exposure to these risks and also afterwards to recover as quickly as we possibly can.
It seems like it might be worthwhile if community organizations, even churches or other community groups, has a time when everyone just gets out their cell phones and links to these things, that might be a good community program to get groups to participate.
That would be fantastic. Like you say, it doesn't take that much time to do it. It's just one of those things that a lot of people say, I'll do it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do it tomorrow. But if you were to start off, if a business was to start off during the day and say, okay, everybody, we'll take 5 minutes, let's go and have you register for this information. So, and it'll show that a business cares about its people, that they want them to be safe. And it also pays back to the business again so that they can have their employees there when they need them to keep things going after a storm.
Well, these are really important things to remember. I feel like we've made it through winter. We've made it through this, you know, rough winter with lots of road conditions and blizzards and so on. But now we're coming into tornado season and other possible events. Yesterday we even had a thunderstorm already.
So we even had a little bit of hail.
Yeah. That's right. We had a little bit of hail. So these kinds of things never end. We always need to be in touch and know what's going on.
Yeah, we want to serve the public, and we, again, want to give them the information to help them take care of themselves.
Thanks, Keith. You always keep us well informed. And now I know I need to get a programmable weather radio, not the old-style one that I have.
Well, you can keep this one, but you'll get woken up a little bit more often than you want to.
All right. I don't think I want that. All right. Thanks very much. Keith Morgan. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m. noon and 7 p.m. on Monday and Wednesday, and 7 a.m. noon and 5 p.m. on Fridays. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Spring Is Here by Ella Fitzgerald. Thanks to Dennis Hart for the Iowa News and Ursula Rudenberg for her live reporting this morning. Incidentally, Ursula came into the station just a few minutes ago and reported to us that the protesters, the anti-gay protesters from Westboro Baptist, did show up at the high school demonstration, and there were three of them there, and they protested or had their displays, and they were removed from the hundreds of people that were there already, but they did arrive and see the counter-protest. KHOI's membership drive will be starting in 1 week, but you can give it a jump start by becoming a member or making a donation now. Just go to the website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.